हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Sri Krishna Sandarbha, Adhyayana 5, Adhikarana 1, Defining the Prakat and Aprakat Pastimes. Page 15. Now let us continue with the explanation of the verse. This is the speech of Uddhava, spoken in the past tense. But the text says, the Lord said. The reason is as follows, right? So he's saying in present tense, right? Though I have great love for the Lord, I find it difficult to understand the meaning of his words. Therefore, I reveal his message as if he were saying it, keeping the ambiguity of his words intact. Right, so he has great love, and it's through love that you understand the Lord. But he says, even though he has great love, he can't understand it. Right, so he's already pointing at a level of you know, what he's discussing is something that the gopis themselves, they'll understand, but he may or may not understand. Right? And then also is that because it's done in an ambiguous way, then that's how he spoke it, then he's going to speak it in the same way rather than try to explain it since he doesn't understand it. If you understand it, you can explain it, but since he doesn't, then he won't. You know. O gopis, you have never any separation from me. Therefore, why do you want to die with so much crying? How are you never separated from us? Because I am the super soul pervading all beings. All the scriptures, Gargamuni and the devatas such as Varuna say this. I am present as the super soul within your bodies, and therefore you are always united with me. In this statement, as with Krishna's instructions on Dharma at the beginning of the Rasa dance, there are hidden instructions on conjugal dealings in order to prevent the gopis criticizing him later. On a day following the Rasa Leela, the gopis criticized Krishna saying, O jewel amongst lusty boys, why did you give us instructions on morality on the day of the Rasa dance? So he doesn't want to get the same problem. Krishna then replied, O ignorant girls, on that day I gave instructions on how to enjoy conjugal rasa with me. How did you foolish girls ever conclude that I was teaching about moral principles? Krishna then told them another meaning to his words of instruction before the rasa dance. In the same way, after being absent for a long time, at the future meeting the gopis might say, O Lord of our life, why did you give us instructions on knowledge through Uddhava when we were suffering in separation? Anticipating that, Krishna says, O unintelligent girls, I taught you through Uddhava all about prema. How did you conclude that I was teaching about jnana? This is okay. He then proceeds to give another explanation of the present verse, which indicates prema, not jnana. Your separation from me is not in all my forms, but only in one. Na sarva mana. It means other forms are there, they don't feel separation. Right? Whatever the other forms of the Lord, all his expansions, this, that, they're not feeling separation there. They're only feeling separation from one. Does that make sense? So he's being very specific here. Because otherwise he's saying, I feel separation from the Lord, but no, you don't feel separation from the Lord. You feel separation from one form of the Lord. You know, it may be the original, it may be the origin, all other forms, but it's that form, right? but only in one form, not sarvatmanaha. Sense, atma refers to body, soul, and intelligence. Certainly, prema is the very nature of my atma, and thus my soul, senses, and intelligence, atma, all reside in you. I took one body only, atma, to Mathura as well. Your senses, intelligence, and mind, atma, reside with me in Mathura. Only your bodies are situated in Vraja. But all the scriptures have said also that I am dependent on prema. I am not independent in my prema. Thus, the separation between you and me, who have a bond of prema, existing only in the separation of our bodies, gives rise to the sentiments of suffering and separation. Prema now, using the vehicle of separation, desires to increase to the extreme. Thus, even though I have great longing, how can I immediately bring my body to Vraja? But when that prema, once reaching its desired level and exhibiting full separation, ascends to the state of meeting, I can then bring that body to Vraja, being dependent on that prema. In this way, the separation of bodies will disappear. So he's saying, the Shastra says he's also dependent on prema, that he means the Lord reciprocates with the devotee, so depending upon the love of the devotee, he's reciprocating. But the whole idea that what he is involved in is that exchange of prema. Right? So then, in this way, for tasting, rasa is dependent on prema, which is, of course, his energies, his devotee. So then, therefore, right now, prema is dealing in a way, in a pastime, to increase the intensity through separation. Because he pointed out before, in mind, you know, how you say, what was it? Body, soul, mind, and intelligence. So the soul, mind, and intelligence have gone with Krishna and are with Krishna. Just their bodies in Mathura, and their bodies in Vrindavan, his bodies in Mathura. He's thinking of them, they're thinking of him, so they're together. But the bodies are separated. So that gives the feeling of separation. So it gives a different. So it says it's trying to increase it. Right? So the prema becomes more and more intense. Then it says when it wants to ascend after that full separation, then it ascends up to meeting. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know? Then the bodies will be together. Because then it gives a different feeling. But it's still just prema. So the meeting and separation are features of prema. Right? It's also interesting, then it ascends to the state of meeting. So that means you've already gotten separation to its fullest, then it ascends to meeting. Right? And then that meeting is there, and it's so wonderful and all that. Then to increase it again, there's separation to take it up, and then take that up to meeting again. So the separation is the most intense, but its purpose is to bring them again to meeting. And that meeting now will be more intense than the last meeting. Right? So that means the meeting is wonderful and it expands the limits of prema. But at the same time, it's separation that can intensify that prema. Does that make sense? So that's why I said the separation is higher in that it has the potency to take the meeting to another level. Does that make sense? Because otherwise it's sometimes just, oh, it's just over here and this is over there. You know, because we tend to look at it from our perspective of duality. But it actually is just, it's one thing. It's just two features to take. The separation is so wonderful, so you want to make the separation, the meeting is so wonderful, you want to make the meeting more wonderful. How do you do that? Through separation. Then when they meet again, then it's even more. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I was reading Kafka the other day. Kafka.
Oh, yeah. Kafka.
You know Kafka?
Yeah.
Maybe my pronunciation is funny.
He's the guy with the cockroach. The bureaucrats and the cockroach.
So even he said that when the object is in front of you, sometimes you think of that object and sometimes you're oblivious. But then when the when you separate it from that object, which is very dear to you, you think about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, we're talking about meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And the meeting is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But meeting and separation are the two features of meeting, because separation without meeting actually
there's no such thing.
Doesn't exist. Because it has no meaning.
Yes, yes, exactly. Exactly. Because otherwise, until Purva Rag, that the interest isn't strong enough to create a meeting with Krishna.
Yeah.
So it's only when there's that complete attachment to Krishna. That means that separation, because Purva Rag is a feature of separation. Only when that comes to that particular pinnacle, then you can start to associate. Yeah, because otherwise, they're non-different, but at the same time, they give the same feeling. Because you said, their mind, intelligence, and what was the last one?
Soul.
Then is absorbed in the Lord, so that they're with the Lord. But still, because the bodies aren't together, it gives a feeling of separation. And even though they're absorbed together and they have that oneness aspect of mood and they're together, when the bodies are together, they feel some hope. A meeting. So therefore, it's the bodies that move, that create, but the mood is always there. That's why he's saying, I'm giving, actually, instructions on conjugal love, not on jnana. For us, it'll be jnana, because we don't have our intelligence, the mind and the consciousness, our soul, is not fixed on Krishna. So for us, we're using jnana to separate the difference between spiritual and material, and therefore raise ourselves up to a platform of sat, where we're functioning in the realm to be able to take part in the devotional service. But for them, it's not there. You're not dealing in sat. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They're dealing in the platform of their tasting. So it's already ananda. So then it's just a matter of they're already absorbed in the Lord and in whatever situation they are. But then you have the expression. The kriya means there's some expression of the mood, the attitude, actions are performed, all these different things go on. Right? So that creates, if that abhideya aspect, that they can interact like that, that will be the sambhog or the vipalamba. Because the kriya is then what brings, in one definition, the hladini is an expansion of kriya. Right? Because from kriya, then you'll get hladini, though actual, it goes the other way. Is the Lord's desire, his icha, and to taste that rasa with the devotees, then that is the reason the kriya is acting. Right? And you can't act just, the action then should be in a situation, therefore the jnana. In other words, you want to taste. Taste comes from an action. Action happens in a place. Right? So therefore, then, that's how it works. Yes.
I think in Paramatma Sandarbha it's explained that in the context that the ladane or the prema is the guhya jnana, and so it's the secret knowledge.
Mm.
It's a special feature of knowledge. In that context it's explained to how it expands from this.
Mm. Yes. So for us, we're going up like this. We're trying to attain to the position of sat, that we're not on asat. And to be on the position of asat, it has to be about Krishna. Right? Then, having gotten to that platform, then we should perform activities connected with Krishna. Then the kriya. Then, why are we doing that? To please Krishna. So we're going that way. So for us, it's jnana. But for the gopis, you know, or any of the, you know, Vrajavasis, or any of the pure devotees, then it's to please the Lord. Therefore, there's action. Therefore, there's a situation. That's why they say, what's the use of this beautiful forest and the Jamuna and that? I think we saw that in one place, wasn't it? Or was that the Dagdamadava or something? I think there was some place where it was saying, what's the use of all this?
Decoration, yeah.
Yeah, it's like this beautiful Jamuna. It's all useless because where's Krishna? So that's the point, is that's useless because he's not there to perform the activity to please him. So it's actually the pleasing Krishna is the thing that's done through the action. That's where the Abhideya is the central feature. Because you have the masculine and the feminine. Krishna is existence. Right? The Hladini is his bliss. How do the two come together? Through Abhideya. Through action. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the features that you may have knowledge. That's the mistake that's made, that if I have knowledge, I think that I already have action and results. But no, it's knowledge that's applied. You know, in other words, through your qualification in the situation, then that being applied, that becomes what creates the results. So that's why you see intellectuals think I figured it all out when they haven't. They have an understanding, but until they apply, I mean, they don't have any doubts. But until they start applying it, they don't understand it. Right? They won't get the results. Same with you know, so-called management. They have meetings and they discuss everything and what's there, what's the plan, what they got, what they can do, and everything. And for many, they feel satisfied that, see, we did so much. They haven't done anything yet. It means it's a favorable activity that they're doing, in that they're acting upon, they're bringing together the field so that action can be performed, but until the action is performed, they get zero benefit. Devotional benefit they'll get because they're doing it for Krishna. But as far as the practical benefit, it's zeros on a good day. You know? Because as it is, they're in meetings so much that nobody sees them. There's no association. So actually, everything's going down due to lack of association. But they're in ecstasy with their friends because they think it's going up, you know, because they're having a good time that nobody else is. You know, same in business. You know, the businessman, they sit down, they make a plan, but unless they affect it and go out and, you know, buy things and sell things, then there is no money. You know?
Yes. I have been in one place, like one of the most well-organized organic farm.
Mm.
And the devotee who is heading the project is making plans in the evening and telling, okay, after 3 days we will do that, after 5 days we will do this, and we'll organize things and all. And the guy who is an elderly gentleman, who is the actual farmer, he says, you keep making your plans, but it will never run like that. Mm-hmm. The day the rain falls, the field becomes wet, then we should be ready to start planting the whole thing. So you and your management
to make so many plans.
It's like they're just kind of making a friendly argument. It's like, I think it'll work. I just can't.
Yeah.
So it was like so interesting.
Yeah, because it's nothing to do with your plans. It's to do with what. Just like, let's say, I planned that the last few days the sun's been out, right? So I plan like this, that the ground will be ready for planting or for plowing today, you know, or tomorrow. But then the problem comes is today it's foggy. There is no sun. The ground doesn't dry out. That means I plan that tomorrow it'll be dry enough to plow. It won't be. And if this weather continues, it'll be even later. But if the, you know, tomorrow the sun comes, then the day after. Does that make sense? So unless you do, it doesn't have any meaning. To discuss doing, that's part of the field of jnana. But it's not the field of it's not samvit. That knowledge is applied knowledge. That's the understanding or realization. You could probably say it's realization. Well, the other one, it's just clearing doubts. Okay, what do we do? Yeah, we could do this and that. Oh, yeah, okay, great. That takes care of the problem. So it's thought, it's accomplished. No, you just removed the problem. You don't still have an understanding. You still don't have a realization. Does that make sense? So that means knowledge isn't actually getting anywhere. It's a step forward. Removing the doubt's the first step, but you can't think because you've done the first step, you've accomplished the third.
Also, most of the time, the biggest mistake in management is they don't plan for the ad hoc. Like, there is never a planning for the ad hoc. Means, you assume that circumstance will never go wrong. And
that's
the first and biggest flaw.
Yeah, no, it's big. I remember one time talking with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I think it was either dropping in or he wanted to talk to me, because he was thinking about something. And he presented the point. So what do you think? And then I said what I thought. He said, why? You know, so it's just that you said that. Okay, that's okay, fine, nice, great. Why did you think that? And then I explained it. And then after explaining that, then he goes, oh. It was like option E. That's interesting. You know, because A, B, C, D, E. That was the fifth one. How many he had thought out, you don't know. You know, that dot on his head meant he thought. It wasn't there because, you know, how you say, he fell asleep and, you know, put his head into his peanut butter and jelly sandwich and it left a mark on his head. You know, so... Maybe that's why. It left a mark on my head. Look at this. You know. I ate one once and look at it. It's like that. Yeah, he thought of all those. So it wasn't that he just worked out what was the easiest one. He's thought about every angle. And then I think he was telling me that he was talking to someone else and they had said plan C. You know, and this and that. So that's why he's thinking, okay, but you know, out of all the plans, then you know, so far E and C have been mentioned. You know, like that. So then, you know, he'll think about it. So yes.
I was hearing the Bhagavatam class the other day, and then devotee was explaining that the difficulty we're facing in Krishna consciousness is that the ignorance that we experience is tangible and concrete, but the knowledge from Bhagavatam is theoretical. So what happens? We can't destroy tangible, concrete ignorance with theoretical knowledge of the Bhagavatam. And then he gave an example. He said, you know, he took it from a little different angle, and he said there's paroksha in aparoksha gyan. And he said paroksha, it means para-aksha, means borrowed or somebody else's eyes. You see through somebody else's eyes.
You've heard from them.
Exactly. So he said, that's our experience of Bhagavatam. We heard from Shukadeva Goswami, we heard from Maharaj Pari, you know, from Sutta, everybody. But it has to come to aparoksha gyan, when through experience, like you explained, through avideya, through practice, we come to that level, it becomes our own experience. Then we can destroy tangible things, because you destroy tangible with tangible. You can't destroy tangible with theory. So that I really appreciate.
That's nice. That's very nice. Yeah. What we have to know is that knowledge has the ability to destroy ignorance.
Yes.
But we still have to apply it. We have to take it and use it. That's why people, Agyata Sukrita, they're not applying it, but it's purifying their heart so that the field is actually able to make that step. So when you make that step, then it becomes called Shraddha. Until you make that step, it's Agyata Sukriti. So someone might, Agyata Sukriti, just keep going. You know, and they're very pure, but they're still, you know, applying themselves elsewhere. But if somehow or another, by association, they make that step, then we'll see, they'll be very nicely situated. But the point is, until you make that step, so Abhideya is the main, because Abhideya is where the two come together. You know, means Sat and Ananda come together at Chit. That's what connects.
Also, the knowledge aspect, being paroksha and aparoksha, is only when it is seen from Vyasti perspective, because the transcendental knowledge is always at the level of adoksha, and it may come to the positive aparoksha. It can come up down to positive aparoksha if you are just seeing the samasthi aspect and not seeing beyond. But it will actually never fall to paroksha. It's we are infusing that in paroksha level, not considering its universal aspect.
Yes. Does that make sense? Because it has to be very careful in that no one gets the mistake that it's still a process, that ignorance is stronger. It's the association of Vaishnavas that you put in that contact. So then you start to see them doing, you see their mood and that, and you become inspired.
Yeah.
So it is still, again, the concrete things, but it's the concrete of they're happy, or they're always regular in doing that, or, you know, these kind of things. So yeah.
It's like saying that because I didn't go out and saw the sun didn't rise.
Yeah.
It's you can consider it's an paroksha gyan, but it's not. It always is there.
It's just always there. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So is that that's the difference
Buddhist
between
stuff.
The knowledge.
Yeah. No, that's the very Buddhist stuff. It's very nice. It's that it always is there, but then it's a matter of having heard from others, then we realize that it's always there.
Yeah.
But it's always there. So it has that potency.
But the paroksha gyan is like applies to a context. Somebody has seen through his senses in a particular way. Whether are you able to see that in that particular way?
Yes. Also then that gives the idea of the aspect of the teacher. Is that one follows the teacher who, how they speak, you're able to relate and use. Because everyone's speaking on the absolute truth, and they're speaking according to their understanding. So they're speaking according to what works for them. But whether that in that particular form will work for us, and that's only because of the Vyasti, because of our conditioning. It means it's absolute, it will work, always work. But because of the medium, then we think of it in one way or another, or like that.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. So that's why then you will be attracted to, you know, associate with certain individuals or hear and things. That's the meaning of the swajati. It means everybody in the spiritual world is transcendental, so they're all on that platform. But then there's different flavors, different moods, different purposes.
Yeah.
You know, ultimate purpose is one, but still that taste. Because it's interesting, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, and just in this, because we're just bringing out the point of the action. And that aspect of that knowledge, applied knowledge. In other words, there's theoretical knowledge, then there's applied knowledge. Is that rati means you're a particular attraction to the Lord. What form of the Lord? What moods? What everything like that? So it's actually an expansion of samvit. Prema, then that is the hladini. So because of your attraction, therefore you interact, you would taste that prema. Because that's why it's all together. There's Krishna and, you know, the ashray vishay, or the alambana and the udipan. Then there's Upa? Anubhava. Anubhava is, it means a desire to do something or some interest to do something. You know, like that. Then from that, just from that interaction, then there's the symptoms that come up that aren't thought about. You know, you do this, oh, I love to dance for Krishna, or cry, or do this service or that, or you just feel like doing that. But the other one, it just happens. That's the satika. Then the mind has all those ripples of the other. So all that together is called rasa. Right? But it's interesting, the rati is an expansion of the sum bit. And because of action there, applying that, that Mother Jashoda then has that desire to please and serve Krishna that way, she applies that, therefore, then there's the Ladin, the Ananda. So it's not so bad being connected with something. No?
It's very good.
Yeah, I just say some people may complain since they think it's kind of our choice to choose which things we, you know. Here's the menu. No, I don't want anything from the menu. I want something else. No, no, what's on the menu is what's available. No, no, but I want, yeah. Yes.
In the Preeti Sandarbha, I think it's explained the symptoms of first time eating, and it's considered as siddha, if I'm not telling the wrong word. It's siddha. So the rati, though the rati is the same, then the all the uddipanas and alam, all the other aspects, chain, anubhavas, and they are like very limited. Mm-hmm. But having attained the stage of siddha, seeing Krishna, then when there is separation, and then when they see Krishna again, that's called rudha. And at that time, what anubhavas and vyabhicharis have, it's like much more complex and much more variegated. Mm-hmm. So it differentiates between those and explains both states in all the five, I think it, at least two or three rati, for two or three sthaivas, it explains both.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Yeah, I also remember from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu when we were studying that, because many devotees, you know, they speculate and they, sorry. Will we raise that point?
Really? Okay, go ahead. Speak freely.
And then they use very freely this term, that the Purvarak.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, Rupa Goswami explains is that our experience is ayoga, means we're not connected. So first we have to establish yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Then according to the rati, according to the nature of the relationship, we might experience that. But calling, like Prabhu was explaining, calling it prematurely,
mm-hmm.
that term, it doesn't match. It's not scientific.
No.
So and most everybody they don't know.
No.
So that's why they do, but otherwise it's not what they think it is.
Yeah. Well, that's the difficulty is if you hear from the Sahajiyas, they don't base things on the scriptures.
Yeah.
Because for them, scripture is not important. It's all a matter of bhav. And so, therefore, then they don't know the science of rasa.
Yeah.
They may talk that they do, and if they do and analyze and give all that, then how do they know that? Why are they studying scripture? You're not supposed to be studying scripture if you're following your philosophy. You know, so therefore these things come up. Because it's there, like you said, it's siddha, sarup siddhi, comes when you actually meet Krishna. Before that, you have sarup. Just like now, we're walking around with a sarup, but it's just covered by the other two gross and subtle bodies. But it becomes perfect, not just when it's uncovered, but when you're able to apply it in service to Krishna. Then it's siddhi. And then, because that's the first meeting, then you don't, you know, it will be, of course, wonderful, you know, and amazing, unlimitedly perfect. But then when there's separation again, then as we saw, the separation as that feature of prema then takes it to another level. Then when you meet again, then it's so like you said, it starts there. But like Sahajas would say, it's already at that point, and then you're already at that perfect place. No, it's just it goes up. But that's the thing, it's natural for the soul, so it's obtainable. That's the thing, it's natural for the soul. We're being idiots, you know, staying here. You know? And since we figured out, we've come in contact with the Vaishnavas, we figured out that we're a bunch of idiots. And so, since we're here for some time, then while we're here, then use our time to assist in the mission of Lord Chaitanya under the Acharyas. Right? And in this way, then, when you go back home, then, you know, these things will all, continue in their perfect position.
So the interesting thing between paroksha and aparoksha is, if you go by just direct or whatever literal meaning, paraksha means somebody's else senses, but aparaksha means it's like not to anybody's senses. It's not to other senses. It means that it's not imperceptible. It is perceivable. But it's there. In this context, it means why it is higher. It's there, but it's behind your back.
Yeah.
Because you are not having a proper vision. You are not able to see. It's a kind of a realization on the material level. That's what I'm giving the example of sun. All the samasthi knowledge is at least at the level of aparoksha.
Minimum.
Because.
Okay, so that means unless someone can apply, only through bhakti, then only they can understand, then they can appreciate the samasthi aspect. Otherwise, they'll only look at things vyasthi from their own perspective.
Yeah, like dharmic perspective, that's where you can appreciate the samasthi. That's the first stage.
Because you accept that it's laws of God. It's not that you oppose those laws of God.
And then that's why.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I was thinking also about this point that Prabhu mentioned, because whoever gave that class, it was an inference, but he didn't say the aparoksha, and I don't know enough language, but I was guessing that it's beyond senses, meaning that you should not use somebody else's senses, but you should through the experience get it. And it becomes your own experience. So that was the reference, but the point, Vyasthi and Samasthi, it makes it even, the whole argument, it gives the scene.
Yes.
It should be implied.
Because pratyaksha means the same thing. If you have to.
Yeah, pratyaksha means physical senses.
Yes, so, but then pratyaksha and aparoksha cannot mean the same.
Yeah.
Because both are perceptible. But then from perceptible what you think is right to your going, you take knowledge from others' senses. And then aparoksha is then you reach a state where you accept the universal perceptibility. That's what is the samasthi.
That's interesting, because Adhokshaja, because then it has that universal, the samasthi, because that's the universal form and all that. That's where he extends into everything. And then if you're accepting God's laws, then he'll extend down to where you're applying his laws, according to what he says. But if you're dealing with God's energy according to your own perception, your own laws, then he doesn't enter that. Even though mechanically it's working, but he as Paramatma, that's being taken care of on the Brahman platform. It's just the mechanics of how it works,
Because the definition, then adhokshaja means adhaksha, it's beyond the material senses. So that's where is the transcendental aspect enters.
And then you go to
aprakrita, it's beyond the material.
That's that. So then that's the Bhagavan aspect. Yeah. Yeah, because aparoksha means also another aspect. They give example that it's you're perceiving it, but you're not directly. So, like you said, the inference. But at the same time, as the example is given that if in the morning I ask you how did you sleep, even though you're unconscious, to the body, you can tell me how you slept. Or something's going on. I'm enjoying the environment as long as I'm not directly applying my senses to it. Means, in other words, my senses are being engaged in something that I'm experiencing. But as soon as I apply my senses on the experience that I'm getting, it's gone. Like if I'm tasting something, I go, "Wow, this is so good!" And I turn to you, "Wow, isn't this fabulous?" I'm not tasting it anymore. Like that. Because now we're talking pratyaksha.
Yeah. That's why some people, they continue chewing and talking.
That explains it. Okay. So they're rasiks. You know, we shouldn't be chastising them for talking with their mouth open. Chewing with it.
Shouldn't tell them you're
chewing and talking at the same time. Yeah.
Also, the logic you can apply from the all three levels. Generally, the material scientists apply from their pratyaksha and paroksha. But in order to understand and appreciate transcendental subject matter, you should at least be at aparoksha level.
Okay.
The logic should be at least at aparoksha level to, like, you know, have that accepting the descending knowledge that Vidya Shakti of Maya Devi is that aparoksha level of knowledge where it hints to transcendence.
Okay, hints at, but you can also not use
it. You cannot. Aparoksha directly doesn't mean that you are going to adoksha.
Okay. Yeah, good.
And Prabhupada also explains in Paramatma that Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. These realizations, even in a devotee's life, these stages we go through in realization.
Yes.
So that's the consciousness from aparoksha, unless you accept the universal principle.
Yes, so then you appreciate actually the Brahman, then how that's being managed by the person, then the person themselves. It's very nice, it's interesting, probably, the example, you have the fire. But then the heat and light can be felt throughout the room. So that heat and light, that's the impersonal aspect. But it's dependent upon the fire, on the personal. So there's no question of impersonal produce personal. No, it's the other way around. Impersonal is just a natural consequence. It's a secondary feature of personal.
Yeah, it's like Prabhu said, they reverse the logic. Mm. And it is logical, but if it's pratyaksha level of logic, that's why also many, when we try to explain logically, like Jiva Goswami does, from a higher perspective, people can catch it, they say it's illogical. But it's not illogical, it's not on the level of your logic, it's way beyond.
It's another level of logic.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is logical if you have that frame of reference.
So that means the discussion is at that minimum coming down to what do you call it?
Aparoksha.
But the examples, because if that works for people, then it's fine. But the examples might be down on paroksha or pratyaksha.
Yeah,
I mean especially pratyaksha always catches people's attention, but the examples are there, but the consciousness and the explanation is not there.
Also, we see Prabhupada carefully.
Fine points. So.
Yeah.
Prabhupada carefully chooses examples also at aparoksha level. Always sun, sunlight, these kind of things, mm-hmm. rather than somebody's like, you know, context, like it applies in one culture, doesn't apply in another.
Yeah.
So the universal example, that's why work much better because.
Yes. Yeah, and then sometimes he may, like he's in London, he might talk about their prime minister. He was talking about the war and their prime minister.
When you're addressing particular people like that, but in the books particularly,
yeah.
It's always at the examples or the level of aparoksha.
That's why it goes back to the books.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Okay. Very nice. No? What's that? Very nice.
Sorry, I didn't catch you.
Very good. Okay. But when that prema,
the external meaning of the second part, finish that much. We start from the external meaning of the second.
Did we actually finish? Is it something you can finish? It's a topic you can discuss eternally.
Okay.
It tastes good. Deeper and deeper.
Okay.
Just otherwise people may forget where we were.
Okay.
So much good. But when that prema, once reaching its desired level and exhibiting full separation, right, full separation, right, a sense of the state of meeting, I can then bring that body to vraja, being dependent on that prema. In this way, the separation of bodies will disappear. So you have the exhibiting the full separation. Because otherwise, if it's just a little bit, it's not enough to create sambhog. So, yeah. The external meaning of the second part of the verse is as follows. But as the source of all matter, I exist in all things. As all the elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, exist in all moving and non-moving creatures, I am the shelter of all, the final cause of all causes, guna and effects, mana. Well, wherever they exist, I exist. For the gopis, the meaning of this part of the verse is as follows. Having taken shelter of the mind, life, airs, intelligence, senses, qualities, and words of you who meditate constantly on me with love, I remain there always, appearing in my wonderful form. So that means he's taken shelter. Right? Because they're the ashraya. Right? In other words, Mother Jashoda is the ashraya of parental love for Krishna. So that love being expressed towards Krishna, Krishna taking shelter of that, then resides in the heart and mind of the devotee. You know, and so then the intelligence, senses, everything will be based around that. So in that way, he'll always be there in his wonderful form. So by that move, they're always with Krishna. But at the same time, as you have that aspect of it, will give the feeling of separation. But they're always with him, because this, you know, there's made the point he's gone away, he's not here. No, they're always together.
This verse in Bhagavatam which says the similar thing. I'm not in the sages.
The hearts of the yogis.
The heart of the yogis, not in my country, but I'm in the hearts of pure devotees who have that love for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I think it was we're constantly, you know, chanting his glory and stuff like that. So he is in everything, but then where the devotee is absorbed in him, that's then where he is, Bhagavan is there.
Yeah.
Okay. Sardar Tadarshini 1047, 29. Your separation from me does not occur in all manifestations, Sarvatma. There is separation in one present manifestation. I was just thinking, wow, it's amazing. Jiva Goswami is also talking on the same. That was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments on that point. Now we hear Jiva Goswami's comments. I was thinking, wow, that's so cool. Yeah. Your separation from me does not occur in all manifestations, Sarvatma. There is separation in one present manifestation during prakat pastimes. In apricot pastimes with another manifestation, there is union only. Na chantar na bahir yasya. He has no interior or exterior. In relation to the Damodar pastime and in Krishna's pastime on eating earth, Jashoda and others realize Krishna's all-pervasiveness and power in his medium-sized form. The two contrary qualities of all pervasion and medium size existing in him at the same time are not impossible for the Lord, who has the inconceivable shakti of pervasion. Shrutestu shabda mulatvat. The defects of the agent do not apply to Brahman because of scriptural statements, which are the only proof concerning inconceivable subjects. From a sutra 2.127. This is explained philosophically in Bhagavad Sandarbha.
Whenever we talk about Adokshya, it's all about the Chit Shakti, which accomplishes the activities.
Oh, okay. Because it's about action, right? Adokshya means action.
And this point comes like, so now this verse come, might have come 100 times.
So actually then the what's it?
Aprakrita is the taste.
No, aprakrita, but the one below. Adhokshaja is actually dynamic. Because then it's dynamic towards the Lord. Yes. For the materialist, it's not dynamic. Mm-hmm. the aparoksha will be dynamic, but for the devotees, then that's the step, that's the juncture between dharma, artha, kama, moksha and bhakti, you know, pure bhakti. So,
yeah. That's the Vaishnava liberation. So
yes, also. Yes. So then they're, because then you're saying, looking at some of it, then it's the action that the Lord is doing in this way, rather than just the existence. Because you can look at just the existence, but it's actually the dynamic is that why that existence is there is what's happening, what's going on. So
yeah, that's why Lord is called Adokshaja, then. That is not referring to his material manifestations. Like there is some, when devotees address Lord as Adokshaja in referring to something beyond all this, but something universal level, then is addressed as some other names. But this name is used for referring in devotional way.
Yeah, because the materialists never get up to that level. Even though they may be on these other levels, that's why you see as they drop down. So you see the so-called transcendentalists, then they drop down to philanthropic. They don't drop down to karmakanda, they drop down to philanthropic.
Yeah.
You know, they drop below.
Parosha.
Yeah. Yeah, they just drop down to there.
I think when we discuss that...
And then they talk too much.
Always. When we discuss short canto, that the story of the four Kumaras going up to Vaikuntha and meeting Jaya and Vijaya, this is where the
transaction
happens.
Yes,
from upper Roksha to Adokshaja.
Yeah, that's true.
When they actually have the darshan of the Lord and smell that tulsi, then they came up to that level. But before they were on the aparoksha level.
Yeah, they're only appreciating the Brahman aspect. Yeah. They didn't catch the part
of the personal
body
feature.
Yeah. So therefore, their positions are similar, but they have different names because the functions are different. So they don't always have to, you know, just as certain things will change position depending upon where it's being applied. So in this way, that changes there. That way, then your structure remains, and it has its natural logical development. At the same time, as you compare it to others, it then increases your appreciation.
Also, Maharaj, I think there is little subtle difference in the Brahmavadis. They may not have the understanding about the personal features, but the Brahman aspect, like Lord's name is transcendental, they can appreciate that, and that is already at Adokshita level. So they have like...
Yes, but it still there seems to be levels of adhokshita.
Yeah, yeah. It's all this. Because the name and then the dham is the manifestation of the Brahman feature in the spiritual and which manifests in the material as the all-pervasive aspect. I mean, that mantra upasanamai, then the meditation about how the name is like, you know, the... What you call it? Yantras and that feature of the name. It has the higher attributes up till then. That aspect they all appreciate. The Brahmavadis.
Yeah, the Brahmavadis. Mayavadis. It's all Maya, so then they don't get anywhere.
Out of this.
Because technically, Buddhists would be functioning at that pranamoy level. Like that. So all it is it's been covered. So it looks like it's something more elevated when actually it's just how do you say? So it's what's the saying? Old grape juice, new bottle.
So then the Shaktas made a then the Shaktas made an upgradation by introducing Tantra.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah. Yeah. Down here, down here. Since he is all-pervasive, it is not necessary for him to create other forms for remaining in many other places. Rather, by his inconceivable Shakti, according to his will, one form alone manifests in many ways. With simultaneous appearances of his medium form and all-pervasive huge form, like a reflection caused by a polished mirror. However, a reflection takes place only by using a reflecting medium and without direct touch or smell of the original object, with the form appearing to be reversed and separated from the original object. The unique feature of the Lord's expanded form is that it arises from his inherent Shakti without a medium. It maintains the qualities of the original, right? Because if there ever a reflection in water, it's not actually the sun, it looks like, and it's reversed. But here, he can appear there because it's his energy, it's him. And so it's not, it is him. Okay, and it maintains the quality of the original, such as taste and touch, and it arises by his will, by the power of the original form. The completeness of all the manifestations, expansions, is stated in Shruti. Purnamadaf purnamidam purnat purnam udachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vashishyate. The unmanifest Brahman is perfect. The manifested Brahman is perfect. From the unmanifested Brahman appears the manifest Brahman as various avatars. When the manifested forms emerge from the unmanifested Brahman, the unmanifested Brahman remains. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 6.5.4.
Now we can have like a higher understanding of unmanifest Brahman is the aprakat, and manifest is the prakat Lila. It's referring in this.
Yeah.
Aprakat past tense still happening while the prakat is going on, which expands from aprakat.
Yeah, you just don't see. Mm-hmm. Separate activities take place in each of these manifestations by his inconceivable Shakti. Thus, there is no contradiction in simultaneously closing and opening his eyes in the different forms produced in different manifestations. The powerful Lord, who is the shelter of various contrary actions, is the actual performer of those actions. This is his nature that is described in many places in Bhagavatam. The wise, however, do not gain happiness by seeing this display of power. The very necessity of existence of the Lord with contrary prosperities is the proof of its existence. Thus Narad says, Chittaram bataitad ekena vapusha yugapat pritak. It is astonishing that with one form he simultaneously manifests separately in many places. So it's one form, it's not a different form. And so that one form he's manifesting in different places because he is all-pervading, so, and all of his energy is anywhere. He can manifest according to his own will in his original form. The Shakti to have one form appearing separately in many forms, each doing separate actions, is not possible for sages. That is what Narada found astonishing. That manifested form is sometimes called Atma and sometimes Rupa. Thus, previously, Sarvatmana meant by all manifested forms. Also, it is said, Kritva Tavantam Atmanam. He expanded himself, Atmanam, into as many forms as there were gopis. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.33.19. Tavad Rupa Dharo Vyayaha. Krishna expanded his form for each of the 16,000 queens. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:59-42. Krishne necha sharirina. He was instructed by the Lord, who takes forms by his will. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:30-40. Since each form is the locus of various actions, the Lord has different identities in each of these manifestations for nourishing the rasa of the pastimes, and by his will accepts not to be aware, I guess, of the actions of the other forms, no? So, by his own will, he accepts, even though he's expanded and it's him in his full manifestation, but then he by his will, then he's unaware of the actions that his other forms are performing. Therefore, hearing about them, then he can, you know, even he hears it, then it's wonderful for him. Like that. But each one goes on doing what they're doing. Otherwise, if he's aware of everything everywhere, then it doesn't have the same flavor. So when he's with one queen, he just knows what's going on there. When he's with another queen, he knows what's going on there. But he's tasting all those things. So it's by his will. That means he could not know all of it at once, but he's decided to just pay attention to what's going on.
And in that context, then the Samvishakti is the one which arranges all these things. And it appears Krishna is under her, covered by her.
Yes, yes. Because he has the power, these expansions take place in his associates as well, right? So as he expands, then the associates expand. If it's the same form, then they expand in their same form. But if it's a different form, and they're part of that his entourage, then they go in that new form. So,
yeah.
They also have different manifestations. For instance, Devaki was present at each of the marriages of the 16,000 queens simultaneously. Sridhar Swami says, Devaki was present simultaneously in each house. So every time all the marriages were happening, she was there at all of them. Because he's there, and when you get married, the parents are there, so therefore his parents were in all the houses at once. So, yeah. You know, and then as he comes as Prishni Garbha, then they come as Sutapa and Prishni. Like that. You know, so there's a different form. Means a different manifestation. Means a different kind of, you know, how you say, nature of the form. You know, the same devotion, the nature of the form. So, but or it's like that as he expands it the same. Just like in Krishna, you have the ones where it's the same and where there's a different mood. Like that. So, yeah.
I'm thinking about how Shastras complement one another, but then the real difficulty comes is that sometimes when we study, you know, particular book, I think, yeah, that if we studied it previously, that would explain the later works much better. But then I think, but now the ability to understand this book is based on what we previously studied. So it's very, it's not easy to see what is the, because if we knew what we know now with the knowledge of the Sandarbhas, then Chaitanya Charitamrita would sound, at least to me, you know, fairly different than what it sounded when we went through that course. But because of the avaranas and because of you know, this levels of explanation, how everything works, and Jiva Goswami, you know, so perfectly puts everything into its own place. I mean, philosophically. Because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, certain parts, I mean, I accepted those parts as truths, but it didn't make any sense, like nothing. And now it does, but you know, it's so it's yeah.
No, but they nourish each other. It's an ongoing thing. You know, it's just like said. You know, Krishna is so wonderful, then the devotees seeing that, they become happy, and then Krishna seeing their happiness, he becomes more happy, and them seeing his increased happiness, they be. So we, by reading what the founder Acharya says, then only, that means, you know, we develop in our devotional understanding. Mm-hmm. Then when we, then only by that, when we read the Acharyas,
yeah.
Then we get an idea of what the Acharyas are saying. Then getting an idea of what the Acharyas are saying, we see some of the technical points. Then we look back at what Prabhupada's saying. We see that Prabhupada's already talking those points. Now we appreciate Prabhupada more. Now when we see things of what the Acharyas have said in the context of what Prabhupada said and see that Prabhupada's saying these, now if we look at the Acharyas again, we'll see we understand more.
Yeah.
But the point where it starts is with Prabhupada.
Yeah.
So the point is all these shastras are all on that transcendental level. But like you said, then you know you go through in an order, then it's given. So they're presenting. Bhagavad Gita is presented in an order. You know, Bhagavatam's in an order, Chaitanya Charitamrita's in an order. So that by going through you come to a higher level. So therefore reading Bhagavad Gita, then Bhagavatam, then Chaitanya Charitamrita, it will naturally take you up. But at the same time, is once you get to that point, now you finish that whole thing. Well, now, when you read Gita, you'll see that it's talking about those things that were in Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yeah. One devotee wrote an article about spiritual hermeneutics. Mm. It's a short article.
Okay.
It's exactly the same point you just mentioned. Mm. It's very nicely done. I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Krishna has different identities and actions in his different manifestations. For instance, the power of his yoga maya seen by Narada is described as follows. Here he saw the Lord playing at dice with his beloved consort and his friend Uddhava. Krishna worshipped Narada by standing up, offering him a seat. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:69-20. Somewhere he was consulting with royal ministers like Uddhava, and somewhere else he was enjoying in the water, surrounded by many society girls and other young women. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:69-27.
Those descriptions, can we say it's mantra upasana meditation? If you see the picture of what Krishna is doing at
Yeah, it'll be, but it, you would say like that. Because thing is then it's specifically this. While you see the Swarasiki generally give a more generic that he was playing with the cowherd boys. And so just leaving it at that, it doesn't get into more detail. So the thing like that. But at the same time as here, he says he's enjoying in the water, you know, or these things. So you do have... Because the point is mantra upasana is simply a picture of Swarasiki. Does that mean Swarasiki is the flow of the pastimes, and then certain prominent ones are pulled out? You know, it's just like, let's say, in recipes, there are, you know, hundreds of ways you could put something together, right? And so those will have main categories. Right? I take some flour, some water, knead it together, roll it, and make a shape out of it. Right? You know, I can make so many shapes and so many sizes and all that, but it's the same thing. Right? Then, there's so many different ways I could put it together. So mechanically, there's thousands and thousands of recipes you could come up with. You know, so like the grandmothers, and that when they're cooking, they don't work by recipes. They just cook. Now, out of those recipes, certain ones are very prominent that, you know, people could really appreciate. Does that make sense? But other than that, it won't. Just like you can appreciate, let's say, an uttapam or a dosa, but you may not appreciate an arai. Somebody says, don't know what an arai is. Means that dosa and the utapama is the rice and the urad dal, right? But an adai is ground up other dals. Mm. You know, like all these heavy dals, two or three mixed together, and it's roughly ground. Mm. So when you eat that, you know you ate. You're good for the next 3 days. You know, go out. You know, that's what Hanuman and the monkeys ate before they carried all the mountaintops, right? You know, and then the coconut chutney we appreciate, but they have chutneys, all kinds of far out chutneys. So locally they like those, but as far as it goes, you know, it's just like how many things of, if you say French cooking, there's two or three things. You know, if you say Italian, there's a few things. Say American, a few things. Mexican, a few things. But they have hundreds and hundreds. So those few things, those are the mantra-pasa. The ones that stand out that are universal. Like pesto, some people will like it, some not. Pizza, basically everybody likes. You know? Or lasagna, that's kind of like it. You know, spaghetti, you know, it's kind of like that. Other things, then it gets more esoteric. Some like, some don't like. Does that make sense? Yeah. Here's like, let's say, a chocolate croissant. Mm-hmm. People may like it, but if I handed you a baguette and a bar of chocolate, then it's kind of like, what do you do? But they'll break off a piece of that, break off a piece of that, and that's the same thing.
Baguette goes well with Nutella.
Yeah, but then you're putting it in this, but they'll just take a bite of one and the other. You know, they're sitting out in the park. You know, you can't prepare things. You just pick something up. Yeah, I'm saying. So that's the thing. That's the mantra of asana. Is the ones that everybody will catch. The swarasiki will have every flavor, every combination, unlimited. It's there is no end. But the mantra of asana, even though it itself is unlimited, but it's dealing with certain situations that we would appreciate.
Also, to be at the level of Swarasiki, then one should be at that higher level, which is of spontaneity, where there will be no tinge of any rasavas.
Yes, yes, no rasavas.
Because otherwise, how can one be like participating if we cannot understand the mood,
yeah.
The situation, and act accordingly? Like just the description before, there were society girls present and all, and somebody who may just hear it and like...
They go, what? Where is society? What are they? Yeah, immediately. So that's why then...
There's no meditation.
Yeah, the meditation is gone. Just like you have a group, you're all sitting around, you know, and talking and telling jokes and this and that, and you're speaking very freely, but then somebody says something that maybe shouldn't have been said in that group. It immediately throws everything off. So,
yeah.
You know... Like that. So it has to be, it means swarasiki means the mantra pasana, according to how you appreciate it, you can move towards it to your degree. But the swarasiki means it's going on. If you don't fit in, you don't fit in. They say, you know, like the saying, if it's not swarasiki, it's not swarasiki. Yeah.
That was, I was thinking about that for Maharaj Parikit, the Bhagavatam is Swarasiki, but for us it's mantra Mayi Pasana.
Yeah, on a good day.
I mean, on a very good day. Because he said there, no eating, no sleeping, no drinking.
Yeah.
And just, he saw the whole thing.
Yeah, and what
that was his experience.
Yeah, and Sukadeva Goswami is speaking more generally, because he has a generic audience.
Yeah,
it's not a straight. Just that was one of those. Anybody who's anybody in the universe was there.
Yeah.
You know, so that was, you could say that would be the pinnacle of that one. Of that scenario. You know?
Yeah.
Like that.
Also, the message here about the sandesh, it's It's like that, like the Gyan is sitting there, they could appreciate everything.
Yeah, okay. Like we hear that and go, yeah, you know, that's how the gopis, because they see Krishna and everything, and from there then they remember Krishna, you know, because we talked about that's the process, but they're not on that level. They just, everything's Krishna, so no matter what they're doing, they're thinking of, that reminds them of Krishna, they're with Krishna. They don't have to go through that intellectual process. But the same technical, external form of it will work for us.
Yeah. And that's how the Bhagavatam is such a scripture that...
Yeah.
It's put so perfectly well, each syllable that...
Yeah.
It's always leading you to higher and higher levels.
Yeah. So as you see, is that... I mean, this particular point, you know, what we said before on that, we were discussing that... Where was that? Was it 11th canto?
11th,
yeah. Yeah, we were discussing about how from anything you can get to Bhagavan.
Oh yeah, 11th canto.
Yeah, and so in that way, because otherwise we'll see, okay, this is this and that's that, and if it's all Krishna, then how do you do, how do I step on the rug, it's Krishna, you know, all this kind of stuff. No, it's just, you're able to see all the way through. But now we're coming here as we're seeing this aspect, and then we're seeing that this works, what do you call it? This is the higher level of that. And there's no contradiction. That's the fun part. Because otherwise, a lot of times, you're explaining something, then there's a contradiction. You know, you told the child, this is the standard. Then you do something else. And they say, well, what about this? Well, the situation is different. They don't match, because it's details. Well, here is you're going from one principle to a higher principle, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, yeah, the Bhagavat, you know, Sandarbha aspect of the Paramatma, and that here to the Krishna.
Also interesting in that example which you gave about telling children, oh, you do this detail.
Mm.
But if you always explain the mood behind doing the detail, there is never a contradiction.
Mm.
Because as elders, you do, but you explain. Get back to the same mood.
Mm-hmm.
When you explain, the children also are always like, yeah.
Yeah, then you expand instead of it's a contradiction.
So that was what we realized after many, many years.
When you hit 30. Oh, well, that's what they were talking about. When you're sitting there with all those kids and being crazy, then,
Especially when the boys reach that between 6 to 8,
yeah,
they always challenge you and very innocently,
yeah,
because they don't know. Like
they don't know. So you said this, but now there's this, and so they can't see the.
So then, that's the time you need to think very deeply and be very careful what
mm-hmm.
you say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the time I started explaining them the mood and the reasons why you have mm-hmm. to do that.
Okay. Then it starts working. Then it starts building. It gets quicker and quicker.
Yeah, and then they become much better than other kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Once they catch it, then they do very well.
So the mood is the main thing. That's, the rasa is the one that drives everything, not that rule.
Yeah. Can we say, Maharaj, that the in the beginning of the class you explained Jnana Kriya Icha. So for Vaidhisadakas we start from Jnana and proceeding into Kriya, and then maybe someday we come to the Icha. But for devotees on that Ragatmika level, they start from Icha and then...
Yeah, this would be... They see a situation. In that situation, they see, oh, this would be pleasing to Krishna. Therefore, they engage in the activity in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but for us, so, it has its you know, it means everything that goes on here has its origin in the spiritual world. It just becomes distorted or perverted.
Mm-hmm.
So... they have a particular rati for Krishna. Therefore, in whatever situation they're in, they will notice those things that nourish their rati. They won't notice other things. And so here, we have our conditioning. So, and that means it's based on our previous values. So we'll only see in a situation what's valuable to us. Right? And so then we'll see that, and then if we can see, okay, well, that for myself, but then actually it's ultimately for Krishna, and then, you know, how, then, okay, I'll do what I'm doing and to offer it to Krishna. But if it's just about myself, then it's if you're not a devotee, then it's not actually devotion. If you are a devotee, because you'll eventually give it to Krishna, then it will be devotional service, but it will be karma misra, right? But then at some point, then you see is that this is an opportunity. This situation is an opportunity to do this service for Krishna. Then it becomes nishkam karma yoga, mm-hmm. You know. But it's a matter of you're still seeing those things that are important for you, right?
Yeah.
But it has no. It doesn't have. It's not self-centered. It's just that's what you can perceive. You're not going to perceive something else. So within your capacity, you start to see what works for Krishna. You know, and then pure devotion is being done only to please Krishna. So you're going to be looking for situations in which you can please Krishna. So then it goes from it being a conditioned nature to it being, I want to do these services for Krishna. Because you have to be practical, these you can do, and you're looking for the opportunities rather than in this opportunity I can do for Krishna.
Yeah.
So it just slowly goes up.
So the first will be the difference between Kanishtha and the Madhyama, and then the last between the Madhyama and the Uttama.
Yes. Like that. So they still work within the context of their place, because then they're working within, you know, their particular taste, you know, in the situation they're in. Let's say the gopis, they always talk about Krishna. They're always doing things to please Krishna. Right? In their context. And so then, when they come in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, then they'll have masculine forms, and then in that masculine form, then they can always be hearing and chanting about Krishna. And because it pleases Lord Chaitanya, they're explaining that to others.
Yeah.
But it still comes down to they want to please Krishna. But, you know, so that's why you see sometimes they explain, you know, some situation is there, then according to their rati, then they request Lord Chaitanya to do something else. You know, it's like that pastime with the, you know, with like, what do you call it? What's it? Jagarananda?
What?
You know, about the mattress?
Yeah.
Like that. So for him, you should have a nice mattress. So for his rati, it should be a nice mattress. But then Lord Chaitanya points out, no, I'm tasting this. It's my will. Otherwise, I will continue with my will and I'll be going to Alalana. And then it's all, okay, cool. You know, so then within that context, then now they make, instead of a nice mattress, a nice pillow, they make a mattress and pillow according to what will match his sentiment. You know, then they take banana leaves and just rip them up and then put them inside a cloth and then it's a pillow. You know, so that's okay.
It sounds like in a Gaudiya tradition, if there's a competition between the Lord and the devotee, the devotees always win. Because they compromise, but still, you know, they
yeah,
push that through.
Yeah. You know, because that's the affection. It's just that they're going in a direction because it takes it into a different flavor. You know, so Lord Chaitanya doesn't want it to go into Dwarka. You know, and he's not taking the role of Krishna. He's taking the role of Srimati Radharani. Right, and then Srimati Radharani, then how is she dealing when she's feeling separation? You know, is it all luxurious items and seeing that it's all nice, or it's, you know, they don't eat, they don't this, that.
Yeah.
You know, so like that. Okay. There is a different identity because of different bhavas. He thinks, I am here. Thus, in the marriage of 16,000 queens, Devaki was happy seeing them all performing various auspicious acts of Krishna in the various places, and not seeing him, she longed to see him in each place. Seeing the power of his yoga maya, Uddhava sometimes felt union and sometimes separation. Yeah. So sometimes it's there because he sees all that, but at the same time it's then physically he's not there. You know, and that way also there can be, it's not that all the weddings were exactly the same. The ritual is the same, but there might be some uniqueness at one to another, and who's there and how arrangements, and you know, what went in what way, and what was, so yeah. So you get all these different things. So that means he's tasting that with his queen, so it'll match the queen's seeing with him. But Devaki, as his mother, because he's marrying all 6, she wanted to see all of them. I mean, yeah, think about that, right? The mom gets to see 16,108 weddings.
Of her son.
That's not bad.
Oh.
And it's not that, you know, okay, that didn't work out. Next one. No. This is that it's all happening. You're able to be there all at once. Yeah, no, it's pretty far out.
16,108 one time, 8 different times. The 8 principal queens are different times.
Yeah, they got it separately.
First Rukmini is married, and then Satyabhama.
Oh, okay, because she came Shana. Back, they came back and had the wedding. Okay.
16,100
is at once. Okay, just at 100. Okay, so that's why then in the palaces they might be doing different. Okay. But still, in any case.
It's not only once, then she got 9 times too. 9 different, okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay. On 9 different occasions. When there are different manifestations, there are different actions according to the bhava. In the uppercut manifestation of Krishna, situated in a special manifestation of Vrindavan at the moment, the associates manifested in the uppercut manifestation experience union with Krishna. In the prakat manifestation, the associates experience separation when he goes to Mathura, though he was previously in Vraja. By accepting these 2 manifestations, he is said to be eternally residing in 3 abodes with his associates. That statement cannot be refuted. In the prakat pastimes, though he sometimes goes elsewhere with his associates, he remains there because of manifesting another form, apakat. Thus, Krishna correctly said, "You have no separation from me," Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47-29. So it's also according to the bhava, because he's mentioning this in his bhava rupa. So each one will be seeing according to the mood, but you know, from the apakat. Eternal union is the greatest secret. Krishna teaches this under the pretense of Brahmagyan. Elsewhere, also, one can see secret teachings covered by statements with other meanings. This is like Vidura instructing the Pandavas secretly when they were going to the Shalak house. Also, Narada instructing the Haryashvas spoke with a secret meaning. So then you have that. So one meaning's there, some will catch it, and it's good. It means for that pastime that the others caught the instruction in one way, then that's good for the pastime. And that the Pandavas catch it in another way, that's good for the pastime.
Okay. So, there's the gradations of poetry, then the alternate meaning is of a higher level than the direct meaning, then it is considered as a top class
poetry. Okay. Oh, and if it's lower, then it's considered a low class. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Otherwise, well, the secret meaning. Why is it secret meaning if it doesn't have a higher?
If it doesn't go higher.
Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.